Welcome to this special preview of the 2011 Learning Live Conference and Exhibition in Birmingham, UK. I'm James McClucky of Edentree. Jane Hart is the founder of the Centre for Learning and Performance Technologies, one of the world's most visited learning sites on the web. Jane is also a principal of the Internet Time Alliance, the ITA, a think tank of leading learning and business performance practitioners helping organisations exploit emerging practice to work and learn smarter. I spoke to Jane about the concept of working and learning smarter and why it's important those in learning and development embrace it. I started by asking her to define exactly what it means.
Well, it's the ITA came up with this term of working smarter, and it really arises from the fact that we believe that knowledge workers, well, for knowledge workers, working and learning are becoming pretty indistinguishable, almost one and the same thing. And so we really think that it's very important that everyone needs to learn whilst they work, or else they'll become obsolete. So that's what we really mean by working smarter.
And how about the learning smarter part?
It's me that's added in the extra piece of learning smarter, because I think there's naturally an added dimension to that. I think it's also about learning in more relevant ways than we have before. So more quickly, more effectively, more efficiently, and in the most appropriate way that suits you and your work.
Could I ask you, Jane, to clarify exactly what you mean when you say a knowledge worker?
Somebody for whom acquiring and using information is a huge part of their task. If we compare it with, say, like a routine worker where they're just carrying out their task according to very specified ways of doing things and haven't really got to bring into it much thought or practice, they're just carrying out tasks, then quite the other end of the spectrum from them. People are having to manipulate and analyse and use information quite considerably as part of their work.
So why do you think it's so important that L&D professionals embrace the concept of working and learning smarter?
Well, at the IT, again, we believe that the accelerating of change in the organisation, in the world in general, means that learning and development can't possibly keep up with the amount of new learning that is required for the people in the organisation to perform effectively. And in fact, we believe that most learning is an inefficient way, an ineffective way of transferring knowledge, because it's just about pumping stuff into people's heads just in case they might need it. And most people forget what they've learned in those situations very quickly. In fact, the Ebbinghaus forgetting curve says that you've remembered probably about 10% of what you've learned in a formal situation like that within about 5 days. And of course, it's a costly and time-consuming effort to produce and deliver formal learning, whether it's face-to-face workshops or whether it's e-learning. So we really can't carry on like that. It's not going to be possible for learning development to keep up with what's going on. So I think it's really upon the learning development departments to think much more about helping everyone to become a smart learner, to take on the responsibility for the learning for themselves, because it's just not possible for them to be able to manage learning in the way they've done up to now.
Yes, I think the part that many in L&D miss about the idea of working and learning smarter is that it's an approach that they can champion to help develop workplace learning, which is, after all, their reason for being.
Absolutely. For them, as I say, it's not shouldn't be seen as a threat to what they do. It sort of actually provides them with more opportunities for what they can do and how they can support the organisation much more effectively than is currently the case.
Now, what resistance to working and learning smarter do you get from L&D professionals?
The biggest resistance I think I get is that learning development professionals tend to think they're the only people that can manage people's learning. And for me, that clearly isn't the case. It's quite obvious that informal learning happens in an organisation. It's already happening in an organisation, but L&D can't manage that. The only person that can manage informal learning is the individual concerned. But the resistance comes from those departments and also vendors almost that think that they can manage it. It is possible to manage it. And I believe it requires a completely new mindset and approach to understanding what learning is in the grand scheme of things, not just in a very small focused formal learning mindset. And this involves letting go of preconceived notions of what learning it is, letting go of learners, letting them become more autonomous, smarter learners. And I think that really does go against the grain for most L&D professionals who think that their role is to manage that whole process.
Jane, whenever I speak with L&D professionals about moving from a more formal structure to one that embraces social and informal learning, they're never quite sure about how to start. So what advice would you give to them?
Well, I think the first thing one needs to say is that all this talk of informal and social learning is nothing new. People haven't just suddenly started to learn informally or socially. They've been doing it all the time. We've all been learning socially since children, and we've been learning informally from one another since time immemorial. So it's nothing new. But what is new, of course, is the tools, the new social tools we have that can help make this a more powerful experience. So I think in terms of understanding how to approach this, it's for L&D to think about more about how can we start now really working with individual teams and individuals to find out where they need the help and think about more about how we can help them do their jobs better rather than how we can learn. So, for instance, how we can help teams benefit from communicating or collaborating in more powerful ways than they've been able to do before, or where they could perhaps benefit from sharing resources or ideas in more powerful ways. So the mindset then is about moving from designing and delivering courses or sort of one size fits all type courses, which address symptoms of problems generally or often, to working with people to understand the roots of their problems and helping them to address them in the ways that suit them best. So not imposing solutions on them, but working with them to find the right solutions to their problems. For me, that's where to start. But even that might be such a big new idea for many learning development people. But so where do you begin? Well, clearly there are people already doing this for themselves. So it's nothing new. People are solving their own problems. But how can L&D get involved? Well, I think it's about trying to find groups of people in the organization who are looking to find better ways of improving their own performance, who are looking to work smarter, who understand the concept but just need help to do that. So that's really where to get started, I feel, is to actually find the right groups. Don't bash your head against a brick wall and try to do things with people who really aren't ready for it, but to find the people by talking generally with people and find out who people would like to try this, a way of kind of improving their performance by using perhaps new tools to do so.
Yes, and I think on the flip side of not starting with a group who are resistant to this kind of learning, it's also important not to latch on to a group who are already working well, as you're not going to demonstrate real value that way.
I think that's a very good point you raised there, James, because otherwise they just see it as interference. I think it's about letting people get on with it if they can do it. And as we say, getting out of the way, not putting up barriers to what they're doing, and help people that really genuinely need the help in the ways that you can improve what they're doing already.
A lot of L&D departments are stuck in a rut of being passive reactors to what is happening around them. Could you give them some advice on how to help shift this culture?
Again, I think it's really about getting an understanding of the mood of what's happening generally in terms of change, not just in the workplace, but in all areas of our life. I think, unfortunately, that many people just want to stick their head in the sand and hope it'll all go away. But it's about trying to understand these changes. It's not just something that's actually happening just in for learning. We're undergoing change across the board in working and our daily lives and all kinds of things. And as I said earlier, I think it's really understanding that change, because then it doesn't really become a threat anymore. It's always a threat when you don't really understand something. So understanding it then means that you can recognize there's huge opportunities for L&D to make significant impacts on the organization. I think now we're beginning to find that L&D and training departments are getting a bit of a bad name. They're not actually seem to be in tune with what businesses are trying to do. But if you can understand that this change is taking place, and if you can be part of that change and understand that change and help it support it within the organization, then you're going to have a much better, a bigger impact on the organization than earlier. And also, I think, as I alluded to earlier, it's also important to realize that this is already happening. People are already using tools to address their own problems, and actually in doing so are bypassing learning and development departments and IT departments. They're bypassing L&D because they don't think they're providing with the service they require. As I said earlier, it takes far too long to sort of create learning solutions. People want things now, immediately. And they're also bypassing IT because they don't think they provide them with the tools they require. So they're bringing their own tools in, their iPads, their iPhones, to circumvent whatever might be banned in the organization just to get on with it. So I think there's a message to be learned here or a lesson to be learned here, that it's time to get in on the act before it's too late, because it may well be that too many people do be doing their own thing. They won't need help anymore because they just get on with it themselves.
Now, in L&D, many people love to measure things and they love their evaluation methods, so let's have a chat about measuring social and informal learning. Now, you yourself have said it's not about measuring it, it's about the quality of the outputs. What do you mean by that?
Yes, I don't believe you can measure informal learning. And in fact, it's clear that a lot of informal learning is actually invisible. In other words, it happens unintentionally and unconsciously. So even the learner himself or herself probably doesn't know they've actually learned something until they put it into action. And I often use the analogy of learning a foreign language to explain this. For me, I learned German at school, and well, at least I learned the rules of grammar and some vocab at school. But it wasn't until I went to Germany that I really learned how to speak the language by being immersed in it all around me. And I remember when I was in Germany, sometimes hearing myself say things and do things that And I think I didn't learn that in school. And I think it's the same in the workplace. You know, you might learn the rules of working in the workplace, but you don't really learn to do your job until you actually start doing it. And you don't realize you're learning it until you find yourself doing something and you can find that you actually knew something, or you could apply something, or you could actually do something. So a lot of informal learning is like that. So how do you measure that? Well, there's no way you can measure the learning itself. You can only measure what you've done with the learning, the performance outcomes, if you like. And so we've got to start thinking about learning as only the means to the end, not the end in itself. So we tend to measure the learning, which really is not the important part. We need to measure the outcome, the end, and performance metrics, if you like. Now, most interventions in some form or other, you can define what the success metrics are going to be. How are you going to measure success? And as long as you think about how, putting those in performance outcomes, then I think you're on the right track. So you can still measure things. You just got to measure the right things. And don't get muddled up by all the activity that takes place, because activity, like learning activity, you know, doesn't actually mean people have learned things. So looking at the number of pages they've read or the number of courses they've completed doesn't actually tell you anything at all. So, and I know we've got into that habit of measuring a lot of learning activity. As we move to social, don't get hooked into thinking you've got to measure the social activity, because once again, that's only the means to the end. Think about what you want people to be able to do at the end of it.
A lot of organisations won't be ready or be allowed to be ready to leave formal interventions behind. So how do you see formal working alongside informal and social?
What I'm saying here shouldn't be read as I think it means no more formal learning. I'm not saying that at all, but what I want to say is that it's clear that we need to use formal learning interventions only when they're the most appropriate solutions, not just throwing them courses, if you like, or workshops at every problem that we perceive. In fact, I can see that many learners are getting fed up with being forced to work through unnecessary courses on every topic under the sun. And many feel it's insulting to their intelligence. And so unfortunately, a lot of e-learning is giving learning a bad name because they don't like it. And I think courses or workshops should be seen as wonderful opportunities to spend some focused time on a topic. But unfortunately, learning in those sort of contexts is often seen as a sort of something to be endured rather than enjoyed. So I think it's important to keep formal learning where it really is the best solution. That might be for compliance or regulatory training, unfortunately. It might also be right in other circumstances, but I don't believe it's the right solution for every learning problem. So I think that is a clear message that, yes, we're still going to need formal learning, but it's not the answer to every problem. Now, having said that, some organisations are going to take some time to warm to that idea. So I think there probably is some interim solutions for people who want to sort of test out the waters, and that probably is to try and incorporate some social informal initiatives into the formal. I don't really mean by just tacking them on or bolting them on sort of as an afterthought, because that just won't work. But perhaps one thing might be building a learning community where people can talk to one another about what they're learning formally on a program or whatever, and then helping to evolve that learning community into a community of practice so that they have access to all those professionals after program ongoing. But something I always to people is you have to be careful when you do that in a formal environment, because you can't force social. I don't believe you can force social. You can't force people to be social and talk to one another. So I think organizations who think that the answer is to implement purely formal social learning approaches are going to have a bit of a shock, because it's not going to work. In fact, I've seen it not work. So social learning really works best when it happens informally and is driven by the people concerned. But I think there's obviously a way to play to help people understand the value of social learning by perhaps incorporating it within a formal approach. So that might be the way forward for some organisations who are a little bit concerned about going forward in this.
Okay, let's talk a bit about some of the communities and initiatives that you're currently leading, as I think they really illustrate some of the ideas you've been discussing. If we could start off with your social learning community.
The social learning community I set up for a number of reasons, actually. First of all, I wanted to create a place where we could have very focused discussions around social learning, not, you know, just learning in general, but around social learning. So I tried to encourage people to join who just really wanted to focus on those kind of topics. And secondly, I did want to demonstrate the power of a community of practice. I wanted people to see this as a place they could come to try and help them improve their practice, which is what a community of practice is all about, of course. And I think actually I've succeeded for that reason. For instance, a number of people have told me how important it has been to them. It's been very important to me because it shows you that they have actually learned from it. And I've got people saying I've learned more by using this community than I ever did on any course or whatever. So it really has demonstrated the power of a community of practice. But as for Yammer, why did you choose Yammer? Well, I have to say I wanted to put it to the test. It's been one that I've been messing around with myself, and I really wanted to see how it went with a big larger number of people. I didn't want to use Facebook. I could have set up a Facebook group, but I know there are a lot of people out there who just don't like Facebook for one reason or another. So I thought, well, I'm not going to go force people into that route. And I know Twitter, I love Twitter, and I love lots of other people love Twitter, but of course Twitter you can't have focused and threaded discussions very easily. So Yammer offered that approach that gave me a kind of a blend between Facebook and Twitter, and also in a very private space, which people like. So that was the reason why I chose Yammer. And well, a few months on now, I think it's working quite well.
And how about your Share and Learn platform?
Well, that was quite a different initiative for me. And people often ask me what the difference is. But the reason I set up Share to Learn was quite different reason. And that's because I wanted to put into practice something I think is going to be the future of, shall we say, learning platforms in the future. And that is that they are going to be platforms where the social and collaboration elements are the core, i.e. they support and enable the informal social learning approaches. But they're not just existing around. They allow you to embed formal learning within it. Now, that's actually fundamentally different from most platforms, learning platforms, course or learning management systems, whatever you want to call them, where the default position is the formal learning course and the social elements are bolted onto that, so that the social really takes place within a formal environment. And it's also pretty difficult in most cases for individuals to set up their own ad hoc groups without admin permission. And so the whole platform is like controlled, whereas Share and Learn is a much more open environment. It allows people to set up groups as they want them for whatever reason they want them. They might be just for general sharing, or it might be actually perhaps to support a more formal learning approach. And in fact, that's the way I've been using it recently. So I've been using it to host a number of perhaps more formal, let's dare say semi-formal programs, so that there has been some structure to them, daily activities and exercises to do. But the value in those programs comes, again, in the contributions and the sharing of resources and experience by the participants in the activity stream. So it's been an interesting different approach from the social learning communities, which is around conversations. This is much more structured. Well, the group, one of the groups I set up within the program is within the Share and Learn platform is much more structured. And in fact, people seem to like that approach. So I'm going to be running some more scheduled events in that way. So again, it's another way of demonstrating what social learning looks like, really, because most of the time people just don't understand what it looks like.
And last but not least, there's your Real Workplace Learning initiative that you set up with Jane Bozar. Could you talk us through that, Jane?
Jane and I both believe that it's the informal social learning where the real learning takes place. That's why we called it the Real Workplace Learning site. But again, both of us have recognised that in our discussions with people, it's very difficult for people to understand what it actually looks like and what it feels like. So the idea was to try and show as many different examples, case studies of how informal and social learning is happening, and try to bring some ideas to people so how they could perhaps think of doing something similar in their own organizations. If any of the listeners do have examples of informal and social approaches that they've been using or the people in their organization are using, then you know, please let us know, because it's about sharing as much as we possibly can.
That's great, Jane. Lots of food for thought there and plenty to reflect upon. So thank you very much for talking to Edentree today.
Thank you.
Jane will be discussing from managing and controlling learning to enabling and supporting it on the 14th of September at Learning Live in Birmingham. Thanks for listening.